help them to flourish, and we're hoping that you can learn something today to help you do that. We're excited to be rounding out our discussion on Kauai native plants. And last week we spoke with Dr. David Lawrence, Director of Science and Conservation at the National Tropical Botanical Garden. And on the same visit, I had a chance to speak with Warren Wagner. So we're going to get to that coming up pretty soon. But we're going to talk about our celestial session here, our look to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our weekly gardening, farming, and other activities that we do in relationship with the influence of the heavenly planets. And today, we are grateful to report that the new Hanalei Moon and Tide calendar is available on the web. It's at the Papahonua... It's the... I've got it in my head, but I've got a little tongue twister right now. Anyway, the point being, the new Hanalei Moon and Tide calendar is available online. We're looking forward to the Hanalei Watershed Hui for bringing the printed calendars to us soon, so we'll let you know when those become available. And today's Hawaiian moon is Kukolu, and Kukolu rose over Kauai at 10:10 a.m. this morning. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 4:11 p.m., and she'll be setting at 10:17 p.m. this evening. And with these beautiful skies over Kauai, we'll be able to observe her transit across the sky. 18% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated. We have the first quarter moon coming up on Saturday at 1:26 p.m. And Kukolu is the third of four Ku moons near the beginning of the Hawaiian moon month. Planting recommendations on this Hawaiian moon: Uala, sweet potato; Kalo, taro; and Mai'a, banana, will all grow upright. Kalo is said to have three shoots if planted today. And I would think that would be especially true of the mana varieties, or the branched varieties of Kalo. We also have a reading today from our friend Robin, great friend of the show, former co-host. She's bringing us the biodynamic look at things for the week. And thanks so much, Robin, and Heaven on Earth Starts for this. We are in the ascending moon now, so the energy is moving upwards in the plants, which makes it a great time to work with the above ground parts of the plants especially. And I would say that I also learned from the biodynamic film that we played excerpts from a few weeks ago, that one of the teachers there said that this is the ascending moon time is also a good time for sowing seeds. So I'm looking forward to doing that. So for today, Wednesday, the moon is in Aquarius, an air sign, which makes it a good time to work with our flowering plants. And Robin recommends cuttings and grafting, and that scions will be of high quality. Also a good day to harvest flowers. Tomorrow, Thursday through Friday, the moon will enter the constellation of Pisces, a water sign, making it good to work with leaf plants. Harvest medicinal leaves, as well as pruning, will be a good thing to do, as it will not grow back so easily as it will in another time of the moon's period. Saturday, the 16th through Sunday, the 17th of January, the moon enters Aries, which is a fire sign, and that's a good time to work with our fruiting plants, good time to harvest fruit, and Robin recommends a glass of wine, too, with your meals, good for digestion, and, of course, that one glass of red wine is said to be good for our hearts, too. And then Monday for next week, Monday through Tuesday, the moon enters Taurus, an earth sign, and this is a good time for working with our root plants. If you have ginger and turmeric still in the field, this is a great time to harvest those, with the thought that as we look at the biodynamic calendar, we follow these recommendations and do the harvest at the appointed times, that turmeric and ginger will store better and be in a good condition for longer in our pantry or other storage area. So thanks so much, Robin, for that. We're looking forward to many more great readings as the year continues on. I want to give special thanks to an amazing team that's just begun their work here on the North Shore. And this is the team of Wailea Trees and Landscape Professionals. They've been subcontracted to cut down the dangerous overhanging albizia around the Kalihiwai Bridge area. If you were lucky enough to tune into Felicia's show yesterday afternoon, you would have heard Paul Nalu, owner of Wailea Trees, speak a bit about the project. We had a beautiful blessing for the team this past Saturday. And the team is comprised of many expert tree climbers. Just astounding to see how much experience is contained within that team. They're working at night, so please, as you get ready for bed, or if you're traveling through the corridor of Kalihiwai Bridge on Kuhio Highway, maybe you'll be stopped for a brief amount of time. Please join me in sending your good thoughts and wishes of safety to the amazing team of men who are up there risking their lives to keep us safe underneath the albizia trees. And we're looking forward to, hopefully, once they get settled in to the work, getting them on the garden show so we can hear more about the expertise that those arborist climbers bring to the work. So, right now, we are joined on air by the new junior extension officer for the College of Tropical Agriculture's extension agent program here on Kauai. And we're going to hear about what he's bringing to the program and about the new Master Gardener class. So, Joshua, are you with us?
Yes. Hey, Paul. Good afternoon.
Hey, Josh. Thanks so much for calling in. And it's really exciting to have you coming in with a whole new breath of enthusiasm for CTAR extension in general. You know, we're really concerned that not only are the farmers, you know, you look at the average age of a farmer and it's in its 50s and 60s now, but unfortunately due to the change of funding and staffing, we don't have enough extension. I know the college wants to provide it, but we're always understaffed. So the fact that you've stepped in is really exciting news for us.
Thanks. I hope to do my best.
I'm sure you will. It was great to meet you a few days ago and hear about the fact that you're hitting the ground running and you have a Master Gardener program coming up soon.
Yes. So we've actually extended the deadline for the Master Gardener application. So the new deadline is tomorrow, right before midnight, and the classes are scheduled to begin February 10th, so they'll be held on Wednesday mornings from 9 to 12 p.m., and they'll run through about May 25th. So it's a 16-week course, and it'll cover a bunch of different topics related to horticulture, such as plant physiology, soils and fertility, how to, you know, diagnose and recognize plant and pest diseases, as well as hope to cover, you know, different tropical fruit, vegetable, and native plant varieties. And in addition to these classes, another thing I want to point out is that there's a big volunteer component to the Master Gardener program, so we want to, you know, use the knowledge that we learned from the course and give back to the community, as well as help CTAR with their extension work. So some of this involves holding workshops for the communities, teaching them different aspects about horticulture, like plant propagation or how to start a compost pile. And we also are exploring the idea of having a plant doctor service where, you know, growers can come to our different events and we can help them, you know, recognize a plant problem and figure out what needs to be done in order to solve it.
Fantastic. We have on occasion, we're grateful to have Dr. Scott Nelson from CTAR as one of our guests on the show. I'm sure you'll be relying on his expertise for some of those problem identifications.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. So I'd love to hear just a little bit about where you've come from. I know you've been involved in agroforestry in Palau, and you bring so much of the sort of latest knowledge of sustainable agriculture from CTAR, which is maybe not as recognized as it could be, and I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Okay, I'll do my best. So my undergraduate is in natural resource and environmental management, which is a department in CTAR. So in that major, I learned, you know, different aspects about the ecosystem, you know, water, soil, plants, wildlife, and how all of them interact and, you know, different management practices to make sure they're all functioning properly. Then after that, I pursued my master's in tropical plant and soil sciences, but mostly studied soils and tropical soils. So took different courses. I'm sure you've heard of Dr. Dienick. So I worked in his lab and learned a lot from him as well as other professors. Then after that, just did a bunch of different research projects, such as we developed a Hawaii Soil Atlas. So similar to the NRCS Soil Web tool, it's an interactive map that, you know, you have a picture of Kauai. You can click on someplace in Kapa'a, maybe your house or your farm, and you can quickly get, you know, physical, chemical, climatic data about your soil and your area. And along with that, did some fertilizer work. And most recently, I was on top of a children's healthy living project. So this is a huge project that, you know, has different, different types of work all around the Pacific, you know, in Samoa, as you mentioned, Palau, and where I did a lot of my work is in Pohnpei and Micronesia. And for our particular project, we studied the food system over there. Basically it's an agroforest system, but we also wanted to see how that food system, you know, food productivity, food diversity, if there was any relationship to the children's health, because I guess certain communities, the children were heavier than others. This may be attributed to a number of different factors, such as what they're eating. Maybe they're eating a ton of imported processed foods rather than the traditional foods. And we wanted to, you know, document that and see if we could find any relationships. And just being in the forest over there, really amazing and eye-opening. You know, coming from a person who's used to seeing a, you know, nice clear garden with, you know, straight rows, you know, kind of bare soil, and you go to over there and first you kind of see, you know, just a bunch of jungle, a big mess. But when you, you know, interact with the community and, you know, get their perspective, learn from them, you see that all the plants, you know, there's a reason why you plant a breadfruit tree in one location and at a certain time of the season, you know, provide shade later on in the course for other things that can be planted in the understory. So yeah, it's really interesting and really sustainable and also resilient food system. We don't have it over here as much as there, but they have these big, giant swamp taro varieties. I mean, one corm is about 50-plus pounds when it's, you know, ready to harvest in a couple of years. Yeah. But, yeah, that I want to say that. Oh, excuse me? Oh, you can go first.
Have you seen that at all in the Hawaiian Islands? Do we have swamp taro here?
Not at least. I may have seen a couple, you know, in a ditch or a stream or in somebody's backyard, but not on the production scale that they have in Pohnpei.
Right.
Or the swamp taro, I mean, acres of it. Some families, at least that have the land, they can plant acres and acres of this thing, and they typically grow, you know, under the forest too, either under haw bush or other plants, or sometimes it's in the open right next to the house, but huge, and it's a big source of food security for them.
Exciting, so exciting. Well, I'm sure that all of this roundness of your experience is going to make the Master Gardener program really a rich experience too. And so, again, please give us the opportunity. You've extended the deadline and people need to be in touch by when, and how can they be in touch?
Okay, so yes, the deadline is January 14th. The application form is online. So if you go to Google and you type in Kauai Master Gardener program, you'll be, you know, directed to our main Kauai Master Gardener webpage. And one of the first stories, it's about, you know, welcoming applicants to the 2016 program. And if you scroll a little bit down, you'll find a link to the application form. And the application form is, I want to say about like 12, 14 questions and really short. So it should maybe take about 10, 15 minutes every time to fill out. And if you have any other questions, my contact information, phone number, as well as email is on top of that Kauai Master Gardener webpage. And you can feel free to contact me if you have any questions.
Sounds wonderful, Josh. And I'm not sure we mentioned precisely where the class is going to happen.
Oh, okay, good question. So the classes will be are scheduled to be held at the Wailua Agriculture Research Station. So if you are, it's on Kuomo'o Road. So if you're coming from North Shore side, if you're coming down past Wailua and right before the Wailua River, you take a right onto Kuomo'o Road, and it's about 2 miles up the road. And there should be a sign that says Agriculture Research Station.
Great. Sounds really good. Well, thank you so much for bringing that. And I know that you're also going to be one of the featured speakers up at the Hawaii Farmers Union meeting this evening in Anahola.
Yeah.
So people get a chance, if people want to meet Josh Silva, the new Ag Extension officer here on Kauai, that would be a great first opportunity. And we'll mention more information about that meeting later on in the show.
Yes, that's correct.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to talking farming with you as the days and the years roll on. It's really great to have you here on Kauai.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here and hope I can do a lot of good work. And also open to learn a lot of things, too.
Fantastic. All right, thanks for calling in, Josh.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Have a good day.
We'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
All right. Joshua Silva, our new Ag Extension officer here on Kauai. Right now we're going to turn to a discussion that I had with Dr. Warren Wagner. He's the curator of Pacific Botany at the Smithsonian Institution, and he does come to Kauai infrequently. When he's here, he's doing a lot of intensive work and research on new species of plants and developing floras of various parts of the Pacific Islands. We're going to hear about a lot more of that in detail in the discussion I had with him last week down there at NTBG at the Botanical Research Center. So I'm just going to fire up the recorder here and get that running. But I do want to let you know, too, about a super website, and perhaps I'll just tell you that at the end of the show, but where you can get more information about a great resource, about more information that Warren has developed in his many years of research. So let's see if we can get this guy a rolling. This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. So I'm sitting here with Dr. Warren Wagner, who is the curator of Pacific Botany at the Smithsonian Institution, and he also holds a chair here at the National Tropical Botanical Garden. And it's a pleasure to be sitting with you and share your work with our audience.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So you have a long association here at NTBG and a very intimate one with the native plants of the Hawaiian Islands. Can you give us some of your history?
Sure. I came to the Hawaiian Islands for a project that was funded at the Bishop Museum in 1982 to do an assessment of what the native and what weed species were here in the Hawaiian Islands, because it had been 100 years since the last book that was like an encyclopedia of how to identify and what all of the species were, both native and what introduced species existed at that time. And that was authored by Wilhelm Hillebrand, who was the Queen's medical doctor in Honolulu, but he was also a botanist. Mm-hmm. And that was published in 1888. And it took 100 years before somebody mustered the funding to do a new assessment with modern methods and the hundreds and thousands of field hours that botanists over that period of time had put in. Mm-hmm. And it was my job over a 5-year period to try and bring all of that information together in new descriptions, new assessment of what the classification, what the species are, as well as documenting what all of the weeds were that was here, since we all have a lot of concern about the natural environment and what had invaded it. And a lot of the people that were working with conservation and protecting the native lands, whether they worked for the state forestry or NGOs, need to know what the species are before they can design plans for how to deal with managing them, if they're manageable at all.
Yes.
So When I came here, I had never been to Hawaii. I grew up in New Mexico, got my PhD in Missouri, along with David Lawrence, who you also talked to, and had never been or interested in the islands. But it sounded like a great challenge, so I bought a one-way ticket and came to Hawaii and started to sort of plug myself into the whole community of botany here in Hawaii, both formally with the university and with organizations like National Tropical, but also getting to know all the people who are out in the field. And National Tropical Botanical Garden is always, that's been one of the great areas that they have led the way in, is exploring and discovering and assessing native populations of plants, as well as the not-so-native areas. So at the time that I first came over to Kauai to collect plants and learn more about the species here, Tim Flynn was the only botanist here, still here as collections manager, and we spent a lot of time going out in the field and the garden, and he hosted me to learn as much in a quick time about the Hawaiian plants as possible. There were contacts on other islands like Bob Hobby, forester on Maui, who were also instrumental in the quick learning so that I could write the chapters on the flora. And that two-volume work was published in 1990. Around that time, I moved to the Smithsonian to become the curator of Pacific Botany there, and sidetracked for 15 years being chair of the department as well. But important work to do to keep that major institution's program going. But I kept working on Pacific plants, and I was first on the science committee of National Tropical Botanical Garden under several previous directors. And then in 2004, when I was looking at a sabbatical here on Kauai to work on a project, which I'll mention a little bit about in a sec, with David Lawrence, I was appointed McBride Chair, which was based on an endowment given to the garden to facilitate communication, modern methods, and good science with external people and organizations, which is really critical to remain current and doing good science in a remote location like Kauai.
Yes,
because you could very easily just be on your own and do your thing. But by bringing people in using the McBride endowment, you can do lots of different kinds of things. And we've had what we call summits, where we bring in experts from around the world, four or five of them, and then put them with various people from NTBG as well as throughout the other institutions in Hawaii on different topics. We did one on systematics. We did one on conservation. We did one on ethnobotany. Were three of them that we've done in the last 10 years or so. But in 1988, when I left Bishop Museum to go to the Smithsonian, Dave Lawrence was just coming to the National Tropical Botanical Garden. Yeah. We were neighbors in St. Louis when we were in graduate school. And
small world.
And it's a small world, but it seemed to us a great opportunity, since we already knew each other and had good interactions, to do a project together.
Yes.
So we initiated a project, since we were finishing Hawaii, to study another archipelago in the Pacific that was similar. And we decided to work on the Marquesas Islands, which a lot of people, both botanists and entomologists and other people looking at ecology, thought the Marquesas Islands were oddly similar to some of the Hawaiian plants. Right. So we mounted an expedition there in 1988, and then multiple expeditions over the next 15 years or so, and now Dave and I are trying to finish. We made a website that has all of the information and images about the plants, and now we're downloading the information out of the website and turning it into a book like the one we did on Hawaii, which will be the first in about 80 years to cover the Marquesas Islands. And we're doing that in collaboration with the French and others.
Yes. Is it merely coincidence that the first wave of Polynesian settlers to Hawaii is thought to have come from the Marquesas, and then you have the similarity of the flora as well?
That's a very interesting question. And in a way, it's a similarity, but I think what the overlap is that for the Polynesian peoples that came from the Marquesas to Hawaii, were migrating from the south to the north, and I think it's well substantiated that they were the first ones, and then another wave from Society Islands. But what we have found using DNA samples of plants that you then can see what we call sequence the code of that DNA sample, and then we can compare those sequences of one species to another in what we call a phylogeny, a family tree of the plant species. And now we, and in collaboration with others and many other groups at other institutions, have done many of these kinds of studies of plants in Hawaii and the Pacific. And what we found, to our amazement, was that many of the plants that somehow colonized Hawaii and evolved into the interesting flora that we have here in the Hawaiian Islands didn't end here. Somehow they call one element of that colonized the Marquesas Islands and even a couple of other places in Southeast Polynesia, but especially the Marquesas, at least 15 different times, and evolved into endemic plant species in the Marquesas.
Wow.
So it's not just a coincidence that botanists or others visiting the Marquesas thought, wow, this is kind of similar.
Right.
They are related to each other, but it's kind of the reverse. People came across the South Pacific and to Hawaii and some of the native plants, and I think they're also finding now insects as well,
yes,
are related through genealogy to Hawaiian ancestry.
Tremendous.
So we're kind of all connected across the Pacific.
Is it possible that back for people who came from the Marquesas, returned from Hawaii 2,000 years ago and perhaps brought some of the seeds that then radiated into new species in the Marquesas?
That's also an interesting question. And one of the things that we scientists do with these DNA studies is we make age estimates of when the branch happened between this species and another. It's not perfect, and it's based on the rate of change that molecular biochemists know that DNA changes just by random mutation. And there are little computer programs that will take the sequences, compare them, and then make an age estimate of when that branch occurred. It's not perfect, but there is no way to calibrate the timing other than this. And in fact, before, we just had to use the age of an island that a species on and say, well, it can't be any older than that because the island didn't exist.
Right.
But all of the time frames for these species that were Hawaiian ancestry to the Marquesas are all like 1 or 2 million years ago, not a couple thousand. A couple thousand years is not really enough time for new species to evolve.
Right. Very good. I want to go back to this amazing duo of books or two volumes of the flora of the Hawaiian Islands that you produced. And it's in its now second revision.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later, you came out with a new revision. Truly a monumental work. And when I try to wrap my brain around how you were able to inspect so many different specimens and decide whether or not you were looking at the same species or if you were looking that had variations or whether you were looking at a new species. It boggles my mind that you were able to do that in such a short period of time, or even that you were able to do it under any period of time. Can you tell us something about how you determine whether or not you're looking at a new species or if it's just a variety of an existing species or something even more subtle than that?
Well, on a fundamental level, our project tried to do it at a very rapid rate and not necessarily get final conclusions, because sometimes that takes years and years of studying. In fact, some people have spent their whole life studying, you know, either one genus or all of the plants of a particular area to produce at the end of their career a book. But we needed something urgently in Hawaii because of listing species under the Endangered Species Act, all of the conservation organizations needing to know what they were dealing with. We urgently needed something, and it had been 100 years. So we tried to be as rapid as we could, but the basic approach is that we use is the same that botanists trying to classify the Earth's plants have always used. Comparative biology is the umbrella that is called, and what we do is we compare the characters of a plant and try and make assessments using a couple of other aspects of plants, whether they're the same species or different species. So we look at, and that's why the herbarium is so important, because you can actually see one person, it would be very hard for them to go out and look at all of the different populations of, say, Ohia. It would take you years to go around and look at all of the areas on just all of the Hawaiian islands to sort of see them all yourself and make specimens so you could then lay them out and make measurements of, you know, the leaf dimensions, the size and shape, whether they have hairs or not, the flower color, the size of the flower parts, so on and so forth. It would take you forever. So if by people collecting them and preserving them in the herbarium, we have a snapshot of the entire geography of a species. It's often not perfect because people randomly going out and collecting haven't necessarily visited everywhere. But over a century or so, it's pretty good to cover all of the areas. And our project, we had money to go out both singly and in collaboration, like with National Tropical, to collect the puka, the lacuni, the areas that hadn't been covered well before, to make new collections. Mm-hmm. And then we compared all of the characters, just simple things, flower color, leaf dimensions, hairs. And then we couple that with how is that changing? Is it rapid or are there very discrete differences, like you have a plant with purple flowers and hairy leaves versus one with white flowers and leaves with no hairs. And so the next question we ask is, well, do they grow in like the same locality? And if they do, then maybe it's just kind of a genetic difference, like we have people with brown hair and blonde hair and stuff, but we're all just humans. Same with a lot of plants. You may see certain plants growing side by side that have purple flowers or white flowers. And that's just a simple genetic difference, just like hair color.
Right.
But if those differences are kind of correlated, like the flower color and the hairs, flower color and hairs in another one, and they grow in different localities, then that's when botanists conclude those are probably different species because they're separated. And they have different characteristics that go in tandem. All of the specimens share those suite of characters versus this suite of characters. Right. And that's how botanists have done it ever since Linnaeus. It's not 250 years ago, it's now
1753, I think.
Yeah, 1753 when he published his masterwork, Species Plantarum. Now, in modern botany, we also couple that with studies doing DNA sequencing. But we still use those simple methods of comparative biology to try to understand that topography of very character variation and how to divide it up into species or varieties.
Right.
And it's imperfect, and we often revise it as time goes out. And then we get a hypothesis of what the species are, and then we go out and look in the field to sort of test. Do these characters really all go together? Are there ever any plants with no hairs growing amidst the ones with hairs?
Wow.
Sometimes it works out and confirms that our hypothesis was right, and then we go and say, okay, that's two species. Other times it's back to the drawing board to try and figure out what the pattern means.
Well, it sounds perhaps simpler in theory, but I appreciated your example of the ohia, which is one of the most diverse plants in terms of its physical characteristics or morphology. And just untangling that one species, I think, would be a life's work. So hats off to you for figuring out how to really create an entire flora that, yes, leaves a lot of questions unanswered, and you certainly give plenty of opportunity in that volume, in those two volumes, for further research. But it's really an astounding work you've done, and approachable from somebody who simply wants to read about where the plant grows, but is also filled with scores of botanical nomenclature, wonderful words that you've never come across before unless you are a botanist, and it's quite an interesting world that runs alongside the gardener, who simply may know the simple Latin binomial of a plant, but there's so much more that's revealed through the very precise observations that you make of plants.
Right. Well, thank you for those words. But a couple of your comments there is what led us, after we finished the book, because a book like that, when people are still collecting, there's new weeds coming in, there's refinement of understanding the classifications. The book is out of date the day that it is published. So when I went to the Smithsonian, it's hard to believe that the internet was really just kind of coming into being around that time, so we wanted to do a website. So hosted at the Smithsonian, and in collaboration with the National Tropical Botanical Garden, we've set up a series of websites that have the same content. Like the Hawaiian Flora website has all of the descriptions that are in the book. But when a new weed is discovered, we add it to the list.
Right.
When a new species has been rediscovered by Ken Wood or Steve Perlman or Dave or Tim, out in the field, we change its status from extinct back to, in this case, would be endangered. Mm. Or when we discover and describe a new species. In fact, Ken Wood and Dave, and I'm not sure who other author, are publishing a new species in the coffee family in a genus called Caprosma that we've kind of known about on Kauai for a long time, but it's just now being described for the first time. As soon as that's published, probably in a few weeks, we'll put it on the website. So it'll be integrated with all the other information. We try and stay up to date.
Great.
And we're also collaborating with Bishop Museum on doing those updates. Clyde Imada at Bishop Museum is also very active in tracking all of the information that's in the published literature and what the field people are doing. And we try and bring it all together and serve it along with information and these detailed descriptions so that anybody in the world can try and utilize it for understanding and identifying plants.
Awesome. This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio, and we're speaking with Dr. Warren Wagner from the Smithsonian Institute, and he also holds a chair here at the National Tropical Botanical Garden. We were talking about ohia, both in our conversation earlier, but also recently because of the rapid ohia death disease that's spreading throughout the Big Island. And I'm wondering if the deep investigation into the variation in this species that's being done in a scientific institute like this may reveal a type of ohia that could be resistant to a pathogen like the rapid ohia death.
Well, the general sort of answer to, not necessarily ohia, but for plants in general, understanding the biology and differences of species could help lead to something like that. Like, for example, with the chestnut blight in North America, they've looked at the closest relatives among the chestnuts that grow in other parts of the world and have tried to find resistance. Mm-hmm. Or with the discovery of perennial corn in Mexico 40, 50 years ago, they've grown that and they've tried to utilize some of the genes in there to improve the health of the corn that's cultivated by doing crosses of the perennial corn and understanding the differences between those populations. So yes. In the case of a native plant that is all of a sudden going under some kind of dieback, you first have to identify what the source of that problem is. Is it an insect that's come in that's injecting some kind of virus or bacteria? Or is it really some natural cause? Because there is a phenomenon called ohia dieback, mm-hmm. that Dieter Mueller-Dumbois, a longtime professor at the University of Hawaii, studied for his whole career, where whole stands of ohia would have synchronous dieback.
Right.
And he tried to study the ecology and the reasons for that. It wasn't disease, it was part of the ecological cycle that the Hawaiian forest undergoes, and it involves a lot of different things about the soil and the different site and age. And I'm not an ecologist or a plant physiologist, so I can't explain all of that for the people today. But there's plenty of articles published by Dieter Mueller-Dumbois about ohia dieback. And I don't know if this present thing is a disease or...
It is. It's a fungal disease.
Oh, it's a fungal disease.
It's been in Hawaii since the 40s, I think, as a disease of sweet potato.
Oh, my goodness.
But then it's a series of new strains that have spread to the ohia.
To ohia.
And I don't think that any resistance has been noted in any of the variations of ohia, and it's been spreading a lot around the island recently
year. That is
it's a real concern.
A very difficult problem. That's kind of like in the eastern North America, the dogwoods are very susceptible to a fungus. And they've known about it for a long time, but so far nobody's discovered a way to
what to do
to protect them or develop some kind of resistant strain. Now I think it's called the Korean dogwood. Anyway, it's an Asian species that's sometimes cultivated in North America. Very happy growing in North America. It's resistant to the fungus, but the native ones, which are dominant in the eastern forests, they haven't figured out a way to protect those.
Right.
I would assume there are people working on that problem.
Indeed, the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture is doing everything they can.
Yeah.
So we'll hope for the best there. When we look at plant conservation, though, at some of our rarest species and look at this possibility of hybridization, which is possible when plants from different geographic regions are brought into a sympatric association and can share pollen and ovule and make a new hybrid species, I wonder how that is currently viewed in the conservation world as at least maybe not the best possibility, but at least some possibility for the conservation of these rare genetics.
Yeah, that's a big topic, and it's one that's been discussed a lot in Hawaii as plant populations get smaller and smaller, and we have fewer and fewer individuals that are possible for perpetuating the species. If it's not completely dire, most conservation projects try to utilize seed or cutting sources that from close by where they plan to put them back out. But that doesn't always happen, and in, there are certain species that we may only know of a few populations, say, scattered around different areas on Kauai, and any of those that you can bring together and cross and produce seeds that might help perpetuate the species is what should be done. But if there's time, it's always good to try to grow the individuals from different localities to yes. to make to kind of see in more detail what the properties of those species are. Sometimes, for example, in a genus in the carnation family called Shedia, that all of the species are endemic to Hawaii, and that I worked with a group at University of California, Irvine, Steve Weller and Ann Sakai, both professors there, who are studying the evolution of breeding systems, and we've studied this genus now for almost 30 years. And we're just turning in a grant proposal to National Science Foundation to do some more methods on some of the new genetic methods to understand the relationships. But we found that what we thought was one species, because they look similar, had similar leaves on different parts of Kauai and also in the Waianae Mountains on Oahu. When we grew them, we realized they had different properties in terms of their breeding system, presentation of the flowers, and various other things that are kind of subtle from a smashed, dried herbarium sheet, as wonderful as they are. But by growing them in the common garden, it gives you a new dimension on trying to understand species and their evolution. So they're now different, treated as different species. And one of those is Shedia kauaiensis, which there's a lot of focus on right now because it's down to the last handful of individuals from about three or four different localities. So we're working with the state and federal folks, because it's an endangered species, to try and figure out what the best way forward is, whether to try and mix all of those or whatever. So it's a complicated situation, but the clock is ticking at the same time. So you have to try and be as smart as you can with the information you have, but not wait too long to try and...
Indeed. So just to finish up, for people who are interested in potentially following in your footsteps and becoming a botanical scientist, what kind of suggestions would you make? Where should people begin their search? What would good areas of research that really needs to be done, what would be good areas to focus on?
Well, there's lots and lots of opportunities. And, you know, for a person that has interest in plants in general but don't really know if they want to pursue this kind of comparative biology, systematics sort of path, you know, they could always come and volunteer at the National Tropical Botanical Garden, both with the either with the living collection or in the herbarium, and by working with the specimens and with the human resources here, which are invaluable, they would learn a lot about what it is that we do as botanists and how we conduct ourselves professionally and in terms of designing research. Yes. And maybe even go on field trips. And by doing that kind of thing, you could find out whether that's something that really appeals to you. You could sign up for a course if you're a student at the university in systematics or volunteer in the university herbarium or something, or talk to one of the professors. The National Tropical has an intern program that a person can sign up for and get a lot of those things. The Smithsonian, the National Museum of Natural History, where I work, has a national internship program where we take about 50 students from around the country every summer for 10 weeks. And they can work in botany or in entomology or vertebrate zoology or anthropology. Or they can just contact a research scientist like me or Dave Lawrence or one that you know at a local university or something and start up a conversation, because we're always interested in people who are interested in the natural world and trying to understand it.
Great. Well, thank you. I really appreciate how you've always been so approachable and encouraging of my interest and anyone who has an interest in tropical botany. So, Warren, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, it was a pleasure.
Pleasure to spend the time with you. Aloha.
Well, that was a great discussion with Warren Wagner from the Smithsonian Institution. Thank you so much, Warren, for taking the time during your busy schedule here in Kauai to let us Kauaians know what you're up to, and it sure is of great importance. I want to finish off the show with a couple of quick announcements. Each and every Friday, there's a botanical garden tour with Bino Costello at Kauai Mini Golf Botanical Garden. It starts at 9:30 a.m. It's a free tour, and it's one of the greatest opportunities to learn some of the depth of knowledge about our native plants here on Kauai. And it's really an immersive journey, and Bino's knowledge and the way in which he shares it with us is not to be missed. So check it out each and every Friday morning at 9:30 if you would like. The Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers are going to have a fruit tree repository work day at NTBG coming up Saturday, January 30th. Just want to give you a little heads up. Executive Director Ken Love will be on hand. And if you want to participate, you can be in touch with Scott at 651-9879. Best to text him if you can. We also have that Master Gardener class coming up. Tomorrow is the deadline for signing up, January 14th. The program runs from February 10th through May 25th. It's going to be located at the Wailua Agricultural Research Station. For more information, if you do a web search for Kauai Master Gardener Program, it'll bring you to the page, and that will be presented by our new Ag Extension agent, Josh Silva. So very exciting about that. And then also, if you want to meet Josh and get some more time with some of the farmers here on Kauai, the Hawaii Farmers Union United monthly meeting is happening tonight, Wednesday, January 13th, beginning at 6 p.m. at the Anahola Clubhouse. We're going to hear from Josh again. We're going to hear from Neil Sams, orchid specialist and also helping to lead the agritourism initiatives here on Kauai, which is something that I know a lot of diversified farmers are looking to incorporate more. And chapter announcements, that kind of thing. It is a potluck that begins at 6 p.m., and that's the Hawaii Farmers Union United monthly meeting. Thanks so much for tuning in to In the Garden on the Farm. And please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land. And stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy. This is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Halaiva, K224CQ Molawa'a.
Like dolphins can swim. Though nothing will keep us together, we can beat them forever and ever. How we can be heroes just for one day. How we can be heroes just for one day.
Peter Gabriel's wonderful cover of David Bowie's Heroes, and another amazing artist, human being, David Bowie, is up there in heaven with the rest of the greats and everyone else. So I'm going to be playing a little bit of David Bowie music today, just in memory and celebration of his life. Always loved him. He grew up with his music, and he will be deeply missed, and oh, blessings to his family. The family, of course, especially had a huge loss. And anyway, thank you so much, Paul, for another wonderful edition of In the Garden on the Farm. Two great interviews. Thank you so much. And also, this is Tracy bringing you Kauai Vibrations. You're listening to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa. This is Tracy bringing you Kauai Vibrations until 3 o'clock. And this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Heaven on Earth Starts and Kauai Marine and Mower.
Heaven on Earth Starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihiwai Ridge, and Saturday Morning Market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda Garden and Lawn Equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
and mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I'm going to start off with one of my favorite tunes by Loggins and Messina. Jim Messina is actually going to be calling in here in a few minutes because he's going to be here with his band. They're going to have one performance here on Kauai a week from tomorrow night. That's Thursday, January 21st at the KCC Performing Arts Center. Concert starts at 7:30. Doors open at 6:30. Tickets can be purchased at lazarbear.com, LAZARBEAR.com. Tickets can also be purchased at Kauai Music and Sound in Kapa'a, Hanalei Music and Strings, Kaloa in Progressive Expressions, and in Lihue, either at Pictures Plus in Kakuri Grove or Scotty's Music. And here we go with Loggins and Messina. From the first CD they did, Jim Messina was the producer, and he sat in with Kenny Loggins, his classic Sittin' In. Thanks so much for tuning in to Kauai Community Radio.